Kirsty Young from BBC Radio 4 on a brisk morning jog with Sarah.
You can listen live or catch up on your computer, tablet or mobile, or download the brand new app. To start your BBC iPlayer radio journey, go to the Radio 3 website.
This is BBC Radio 3, 90 to 93 FM on digital radio and online. It's 1 o'clock and this is David Cornett with a summary of the news. The US presidential candidates are heading into the final 2 days of campaigning with the outcome still too close to call. The Republican candidate, Mitt Romney, will campaign in Iowa, Ohio, Pennsylvania and Virginia, while Barack Obama heads for New Hampshire, Florida, Ohio and Colorado. Both candidates addressed large rallies in key swing states on Saturday. Syrian opposition groups are beginning a series of meetings in Qatar. They're trying to unify their ranks to form a national government in exile. The biggest group, the Syrian National Council, is holding 4 days of intensive internal talks aimed at bringing in younger elements who are closer to events on the ground. A former head of the Metropolitan Police has warned that police officers are suffering a national crisis of morale. Lord Stevens is leading an independent commission on policing, which was set up by the Labour Party last year. A survey of 14,000 serving officers suggested that 95% didn't feel they had the support of the government. An off-duty British soldier has been killed in a fight inside a nightclub in Cyprus. The 19-year-old and three of his colleagues have been arguing with three British tourists in the resort of Ayia Napa. The incident happened in an area that's off-limits for British troops because of trouble in the past. Egypt's 8 million Coptic Christians have a new pope. A blindfolded altar boy picked Bishop Tawadros's name from a chalice in a ceremony in Cairo this morning. Strict measures were taken to ensure that no one candidate was favoured. Britain's oldest man, Reg Dean, is marking his 110th birthday today. His son, Christopher, says his father's long life may relate to a mysterious potion he was given in India when he was a young man. A doctor reportedly gave his father a muddy-coloured drink, claiming that if he drank it, he would live to be 100. And the weather, showers will move eastwards across the southern part of England and Wales, with a few heavy and thundery downpours possible for western areas. Further north in the UK, it'll be drier with long, clear spells. BBC News and Weather at coming up to 1:03. And time now to join Catherine Bott for today's edition of The Early Music Show.
400 years ago, Prince Henry, heir to the English throne, took an ill-advised dip in the River Thames, and as a result, succumbed to typhoid fever in November 1612. He was just 18, and his death brought on extravagant outpourings of national grief. There was barely a composer who didn't rush to put pen to paper with some sort of tribute. And at the 2012 York Early Music Festival, the vocal octet Gallicantus and lutenist Elizabeth Kenny presented a programme of them, Dialogues of Sorrow.
And serve to ward all the plants of woe grown in thy funeral. Oh, how can music's saddest tones express with sighs or tears a public heaviness? Death is still the fatal ground whereon all hearts their mournful descant sound. Only thy death is still the fatal ground whereon all hearts
thank you.
dying ember with cold ashes quelled, and reft the world of all the worth she held. Oh, why could virtue framed of heavenly could virtue framed of heavenly mould bereft life's heat to enjoy death's ashes cold? Ah, cursed death, thou couldst not with one blow elsewhere have sought to work so many woe, yet hast thou missed the mark thou didst intend, till thousand lives in whom he lives shall end. Oh, hast thou such another blow in store, the world would die that then might be no more. Oh, hast thou such another blow in store, the world would that then might be no more.
Robert Ramsay's lament for Prince Henry, "What Tears, Dear Prince," sung by tenor Christopher Watson with lutenist Elizabeth Kenny. A delicate and haunting opening to a concert of mournful music given by Gallicantus at the 2012 York Early Music Festival. Gallicantus means cockcrow and refers to a monastic office held just before dawn, a rite that symbolises the renewal of life offered by each new day. Sadly for Prince Henry, there was no such renewal in 1612, and fittingly there was nothing rousing or raucous about the music-making in this thoughtful programme. Next, a group of three madrigals by different composers, all of whom were employed by Prince Henry. The pieces are kept at the library of Christ Church College, Oxford, in part books, with the bass parts missing. Francis Steele, himself a consort bass singer of distinction, has reconstructed the parts to enable Gallicantus to sing these plangent pieces. "'Tis Now, Dead Night" by Thomas Ford, "'Weep, Weep, Britons" by William Cranford, and "No Object Dearer" by John Ward.
Thank you.
Three madrigals sung by Gallicantus who have given the set the informal title Passions on the Death of Prince Henry. Henry's sorrowing father, King James, was often compared to the biblical King David by poets and playwrights of the day in tribute to his perceived wisdom and moderation. Here now are two pieces by Thomas Wilkes. First, David's lament for Jonathan, "My brother, thy love to me was wonderful, passing the love of women." And then his setting of the famous text, "When David heard that Absalom was slain."
Thank you.
David's Laments for Jonathan and then for his son Absalom, set by Thomas Wilkes. More than 20 of the surviving elegies for Prince Henry make that analogy with David and Absalom, and the psychology of the story is quite complex. Here's the director of Gallicantus, Gabriel Crouch.
The story of David and Absalom crops up so much in this music because there was a parallel drawn in literary reference and in letters and so on between King James and King David. Similarly, there were occasional parallels drawn between Absalom and Prince Henry. So Absalom was the son of King David. Henry was the eldest son of King James. And it's a particularly interesting analogy to draw with reference to this story because the relationship between David and Absalom was very complicated. In fact, they were at enmity with each other by the time Absalom died. And Absalom was actually killed by one of David's own lieutenants. So the grief that David expressed for his son Absalom was a particularly poignant and sort of twisted, tortured grief because he knew in the back of his mind that he'd had a role to play in his son's death. I think that some of these, the composers of the day, I think they quite enjoyed, you know, the juice of using this analogy because people will have understood at the time that David doesn't come out of that story with that much credit. And King James wasn't massively popular. I think I should say that not everyone believes that all of these settings of David and Absalom are definitely related to the death of Henry, but it's pretty much without question that most of them are, and that's where the tradition, this flowering of these settings, I think that's where this tradition first began, was with the death of Henry.
Gabriel Crouch talking to me before the concert given by Gallicantus at the 2012 York Early Music Festival. Now another masterpiece which sets the text, When David Heard. This time the composer is Thomas Tomkins. Gallicantus with David's Lament for His Son Absalom by Thomas Tomkins. You're listening to The Early Music Show with me, Catherine Bott, and a programme of mourning songs for the 18-year-old Prince Henry of England, carried off by typhoid in 1612. Those madrigals by Wilkes and Tomkins are well known to early music lovers. One of the great pleasures of this concert was having a chance to hear some less familiar repertoire occasioned by royal tragedy. This duet by Thomas Votor is strewn with emphatic alliteration. Melpomene, bewail thy sister's loss, in tragic dumps their dollars deep display. It's sung now by soprano Amy Moore and countertenor Mark Chambers. Prince Henry's dead, farewell, the Muses' king. Amy Moore and Mark Chambers with lutenist Elizabeth Kenny in that tear-stained duet by Thomas Votor. And here's a madrigal in which the singers undertake to sing and dance solemnly in the prince's memory. Robert Ramsay's Sleep, Fleshly Birth in Peaceful Earth. Sleep, Fleshly Birth by Robert Ramsey, sung by Gallicantus. Solo songs by Giovanni Coprario played an important role in this concert. I asked Elizabeth Kenny to describe them and their exotic-sounding composer.
Most of the lute songs are written by Giovanni Coprario, who, before he went to Italy, started life as John Cooper. But then he decided to come back as a real Italian musician and gentleman. And he also imported a very powerful, dramatic way of delivering a text. And this seems incredibly well suited to these particular songs, because what he did was set a group of poems written by his friend and colleague Thomas Campion, and instead of writing them in a very lyrical, melodic way, like many of the madrigals we've heard, and many of Campion's own songs, he brought this very fragmented, slightly disjointed, angular melodic style, which was perfect for expressing the complete bewilderment that everybody felt at the sudden death of Prince Henry. And Coprario and Campion were both living on a knife edge between the old world, the Renaissance world, which was symbolised by Prince Henry, with his chivalry, his Renaissance patronage, his beauty, his prowess on the battlefield, and a new, rather uncertain world in which nobody knew what was going to happen next, what would happen with the Stuart dynasty. All eyes were on his younger brother Charles and whether he would live up to the promise showed by his brother. And musically as well, these songs are very much on a knife edge. They look backwards to a golden age of lute song, but it's taken into a very murky, very, very modern sounding territory.
Lutenist Elizabeth Kenny. Coprario published his Songs of Mourning in 1613, with a title page saying they were songs bewailing the untimely death of Prince Henry, worded by Thomas Campion, and set forth to be sung with one voice to the lute or viol. We're going to hear two of them now. First, Mark Chambers with So Parted You, dedicated to the prince's sister Elizabeth, and then Gabriel Crouch in a song dedicated to the most disconsolate Great Britain, When Pale Famine Fed on Thee.
Sure. Civil broil set murder free, contemning all thy laws. When heaven in rage consumed thee so with plagues that none thy face would know, yet in thy looks affliction then showed less than now for once fate all thy parts express. Yet in thy looks affliction then showed less than now for once fate all thy parts express. Now thy high estates lament a son and brother's loss, thy nobles mourn in discontent and rue this fatal cross. Thy commons are with passion sad to think how brave a prince they had. If all thy rocks from white to black should turn, yet couldst thou not in show more amply moon. If all thy rocks from white to black should turn, couldst thou not in show more ample moon?
Two songs by Giovanni Coprario, sung by Mark Chambers and then Gabriel Crouch, with lutenist Elizabeth Kenny. Had the young Stuart prince lived and reigned as King Henry IX, English history would have been very different. He was apparently handsome, chivalrous, brave and cultured. His younger brother Charles also loved the arts, but was vain and vacillating. His reign was to end in royal bloodshed, civil war and a redefining of the role of the monarchy. All unforeseen in 1612, when musicians tuned their lutes and voices to songs of lamenting for promise unfulfilled. Gallicantus ended their York programme with a song asking that all hearts may be moved to sigh and plain since death hath slain Prince Henry. John Ward's Weep Forth Your Tears.
Thank you.
Gallicantus singing John Ward's Weep Forth Your Tears. All the music was recorded earlier this year at the York Early Music Festival, and the Early Music Show was presented by Catherine Bott. Next Saturday, Lucy Skeeping presents a live broadcast of the programme from the 2012 Greenwich Early Music Festival and Exhibition. That's at the same time, just after the 1 o'clock news here on BBC Radio 3.
In Afternoon on 3, we've performances from Dutch orchestras and ensembles, with music from concerts given at the Concertgebouw and in Utrecht. Maris Janssens conducts the Royal Concertgebouw, and there's music from Janine Janssen, the Amsterdam Sinfonietta, the Netherlands Radio Chorus and Chamber Philharmonic, Baroque Opera Amsterdam, the Combattimento Consort and the Hague Residentia Orchestra. Join me, Louise Fryer, weekdays on BBC Radio 3 from 2 o'clock.
Well, now it's time to join the BBC's Scottish Symphony Orchestra for the Sunday concert. It's presented by Mary Ann Kennedy.
You join us at Eden Court, the main concert venue of the Highland capital, Inverness. The original 19th century building was the official residence of the Bishops of Moray. It was redeveloped in the mid-70s to provide the Highlands with its first major theatre. It's since added a second auditorium, two cinemas and dance and drama studios, but it retained the wonderful original space we're in just now, rechristening it the Empire Theatre after one of the city's former music halls. With me on stage are the BBC Scottish Symphony Orchestra, led by Laura Samuel and directed by their associate guest conductor, Andrew Manzi. They'll be playing a Mendelssohn overture inspired by a mermaid, Schubert's last great symphony, and joined by the distinguished oboist Nicholas Daniel, a wartime concerto by Vaughan Williams. So we begin with a character which appears in different forms throughout Europe. Here in the Highlands, we might think of her as a Selkie. In the case of Melusine, though, she's a mermaid, daughter of a human father and a fairy mother, and born with a fishtail that she tries but ultimately fails to hide from her beloved. The discovery leads inevitably to her fleeing, never to return. Mendelssohn never meant for this to be an overture to anything in particular, so the piece doesn't really tell the story of Melusine, but it creates a rippling backdrop to this tale of doomed love, reminiscent in some ways of Wagner's Rhine music, and indeed it was written while Mendelssohn was based in Dusseldorf on the banks of that famous river. So please welcome then the BBC Scottish Symphony Orchestra, conducted by Andrew Manzi, for Mendelssohn's concert overture, The Fair Melusine.